Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name's Bill Cundiff. Oh, my mic seems like it's a little loud.
Just your headphones are too loud.
It could be.
So who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local Kubota tractor dealer. They're up on 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And right now they've got some deals going on brand new Kubota tractors. Go up and see them. They also have their service special running. You can get a discount on your service labor. And give them a call.
Mowers, tractors. Mowers, tractors.
They got it all going on.
If it's orange, you guys are in it.
Yeah, yeah. And this weekend you can see them down at the Shasta District Fair. They've got a display down there for the Redding Sport and Boat Show, I think it is.
It's really the Redding Rains Every Year on It show.
Yeah, it is.
They should just change the name.
Yeah, take an umbrella. But good turnout from what I understand. Anyway, give them a call at 226-9226 or see them online at reddingtractors.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Without incident.
There you go.
Because we have a serious topic today, so we don't want to, you know, goof around and get derailed. And I know we're going to need every minute of today's show. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyens, and this is The Real South Africa, Part 9. It's a good thing I started numbering the shows, because otherwise it would just be too confusing.
Right.
But the subtitle, I suppose we'll call it, on the program is The South African Crisis Has Reached the U.S. Border. You might be asking, how could we possibly talk about South Africa again? Oh, there's more.
It's amazing that mainstream media has not touched this.
A tiny bit. And he's going to talk about that today. But honestly, now, you know, the programs we've done on the border, here comes South Africa connected to that. And so we will let, We will let Dr. Booyens do all of that. And I guess I should tell you about him in case you've never heard of him. And how could you not have heard of him? There were obviously 8 previous episodes.
That's right. Let's hope you listen to at least one of them.
Okay, you missed like one or two, maybe, but not all of them. You can always find everything about the program and all those past episodes that we're hammering you about at wethepeopleradio.us. Everything is stored on our site commercial-free, and you can use it however you like. They are MP3 files. So you can give them to other people. If you have a club or a group and you want to play them in a meeting or put them on CDs and sell them to raise money, we don't care. We do this show to educate, so you can do whatever you like. And Dr. Harry Booyens is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. So this isn't just a person with opinions. This is a person with some credentials. He is originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country. He currently lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. His life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of Berlin, the Berlin Wall. It's funny how all these things are all coming together. The border, the communism, I mean, you name it, it's all intersecting.
There's plenty to talk about, that's for sure.
And his time included interaction with the United States and British defense establishments. He applies his lifetime of science and research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy and an engaging style, and I can testify to that. We get quite a few emails from him, and I try to include many of those on the website for you. Hard Evidence is a trademark of his work, and it's won him a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what is happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general and the United States of America in particular. So I will we'll defer to him at this point. And just to, in case we air this at a different time, it's March 3rd, 2019, when we're first airing this. So if things have changed by the time you hear this or it is replayed, just know that the reference point is March 3rd, 2019. And our guest is Dr. Harry Booyens.
Welcome, Harry.
Hi, Bill.
You always sound so good on Skype. It sounds like you're right here.
I think that's kind of the idea with it. I did a radio session, two of them, in the last few days, and they don't sound too good, man.
Oh, with the phone? Using just regular phone connect?
The regular phone connection, not so good.
Well, it's a hit and miss around our deal. Sometimes the Skype works great, and then other times it's just one big technical snowball running downhill.
Yeah, you mentioned the South Africa thing, and you mentioned the border, and I got like a whole array of papers surrounding me here because there's so many different points from which one can start, each of which is pretty much immediately relevant to Americans. But maybe we should start with that point about the border.
Yes.
Sure.
And I know you sent me the, and I have it, but the part about the book jacket, so I didn't want to just be reading. So you let me know when you want to include that.
Okay.
Lest you think I didn't actually read your email. I didn't want to get in trouble right at the very beginning.
You will be tested on that email, madam, and you know I'm from South Africa. We do terrible things to people, I believe. Isn't that what the media says?
Oh, yeah.
Monsters.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Do you have that cover?
I do.
Excerpt? Why don't you read that? Because I think that may be a good point to start.
Okay. All right, so this is from the back cover of what... Okay, why don't you tell them about your book, since you're better about your book than I am.
For my sins, I wrote a book called Amabulu back in 2014. It was published, and around about then, I made some predictions. And this excerpt is off the back cover, and this is what I thought Aaron might want to share with everyone who's listening.
And there's information about the book. I put it actually, it's always on the web, along actually with the other 8 shows. I have the links for those all on the page for today. So at wethepeopleradio.us, it's all sitting right there. Okay, so the West has finally realized that bringing democracy to the Middle East and Southwest Asia is not necessarily in the best interest of Western civilization. Radical Islam is hijacking its plans and making a mockery of democracy itself. In South Africa, an earlier experiment in, quote, bestowed democracy is falling under the burden of abuse, much taken with its own role in undoing apartheid more than a generation earlier. The West prefers to look away, and obviously we're seeing that in spades. It appears to treat the plight of Western people in that country as a form of required penance. In the process, it indulges what is, in effect, a corrupt one-party state kleptocracy run along the party congress lines of its own mentor, the defunct Soviet Union. In 1797, the British Royal Navy feared South Africa would become a second America for Britain, while in the 20th century, the country was to Africa what the United States was to the world. Amabulu describes the developing crisis in the second America that will inevitably entangle the first America. In the end, the burden falls to the author to describe the demise of the first limb of the West to wither. It is a study in the death of civilization by its own collective hand, a severe warning for the West. Amabulu should give pause to every thinking Westerner. And honestly, it's factually and document-rich, you know, research-rich. There is no opinion really in there. You did an amazing job.
Thank you, ma'am.
The book's
the
huge.
Point is that at that time,
you need 2 men and a boy to carry it around for you if you're going to take the book on the road.
As the author of the thing, I would warn folks that it actually weighs 4 pounds. It's the size of a telephone directory
in a large city.
It makes an excellent doorstop, which is one of its greater merits, I think. And it also, the police would recognize it as potentially a blunt object, you know, as used by some people against others. But,
plus it's filled with facts, so that's really confusing sometimes in today's world.
It blows the total narrative.
And I guarantee the media has never read it. I'm terribly sorry. I walked you right into a blind alley here. We have to take a really quick break and then we'll come back.
That's okay.
Yeah, we're going to do that a couple times, I'm sure. Ashley's giving me arm signals in the background. Alrighty, we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Buyens. We will be chatting about South Africa today. What shall we do about okay. Now we have some uninterrupted time. She said.
Okay, I guess we stopped at the point where we had just mentioned the book, and I said that when it was published back in almost exactly 5 years ago, I actually warned that it would take 5 years for this thing to become a complete open sore on the planet. Okay, I gave the period of 5 years.
Why? Why did you pick that back then?
Two reasons. I have a feel for the rate at which things happen in South Africa, and secondly, I knew there would be this particular election coming up.
Mm.
And the U.S. is like that as well. It loses its mind every time just before an election.
We're going to make exception for 2020. We're going to lose our mind this year so we can experience the craziness for two full years rather than just one.
It does rather sound like that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it really is that way, I'm afraid.
So, what we've talked about before on eight separate shows of yours is we went through the history of South Africa just a little bit. We talked about parallels. We talked about things where people have false parallels with South Africa. We talked quite a bit about the farm expropriation thing. But I guess for some folks, it remained like an abstract idea about some faraway place that doesn't affect them. So let me share the following with you. I put it for you under the title that the crisis in South Africa has reached the U.S. border. The first ever white South African farmer and his family have now asked for asylum at the U.S. border with Mexico. After waiting in a Mexican holding facility for 3 weeks, they met with U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, CBP, and spent 3 days in the custody of the agency. Over that period, they had extensive interviews, which included the famous or infamous credible fear test, which they apparently passed. Their daughter, who's a minor, was questioned for 3 hours by the CBP without their parents being present. They've been paroled into the custody of friends in the United States, and they do not have to wear ankle bracelets, as so often happen with people who try to do things correctly. Based on what CBP learned in the process, the family's been allowed to at least apply for asylum. There's a long road ahead for them, but they've done it all the correct way as far as the U.S. authorities are concerned. They did not jump a fence. They were not handled by coyotes. They did not clash with ICE in any way. They simply presented themselves properly to Customs and Border Patrol and asked for asylum from those who threatened their existence.
And so just in the back of my mind, I'm hearing people say, well, why didn't they just get a visa to come here from South Africa?
Well, if they took a visa and then overstayed the visa, that would not be doing things the right way.
Correct. And would the South African government let them go? Is there a way for them to apply for asylum in South Africa or from South Africa, maybe?
Replace the word South Africa with North Korea.
Right.
That's, I think, the part that people don't know or realize.
Okay. So this is the kind of thing, is that I don't know the identity of the family, and I would under no circumstances, for example, divulge it if I knew it. And the reason is simple. The moment their name is known, the communist ANC government in South Africa, along with their devoted allies, the BBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, New York Times, Washington Post, will start to assail the character of the family, and that government will serve, I guess the fancy word is a démarche on the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, demanding that any possible asylum be immediately withdrawn. And, you know, you already know, as well as I do, that white people in North America only have to hear the word racist in a sentence somewhere on the horizon before they'll drop their guns, throw away their shoes, and run like hell for their very lives to the four wind directions, no matter what the truth or the reality or the nature of the party uttering that word. So, I will talk about these folks. I will not mention their names. I will not do a single thing that will help that decrepit government down there get at them.
Because you didn't leave by accident. You didn't get transferred with a job. You didn't... there are many reasons that somebody might leave a country that they had almost 400 years of family history. But you left on purpose.
I left on purpose, and these folks left because of what they experienced. Okay? And maybe... if Ashley would be so good as to line up, I guess it's clip 9. This is the attorney. This is the U.S. attorney for this family who's helping to guide them through this process. This comes from a YouTube video that the attorney has made. So I don't know if Ashley's ready for us with that.
What's going on is the government has voted to seize the land of white farmers without compensation. There are also a number of other laws that are discriminatory against whites, but this is the big one recently, is that the government has voted to simply take their farms and not pay them any money. And for the people who say that the stories about what's going on in South Africa are fake and there's no persecution of whites down there, it's all made up, this is well documented by the mainstream media that the government has voted on this. Here's a story. This is from the Daily Mail, and there's a lot of news stories about this. This isn't the only one. This is actually from early in 2018. It says, "We are not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now. South African Parliament votes to seize white-owned land as experts warn of violent repercussions." That quote, "We are not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now," that was from a prominent South African politician who said that publicly. This article says, "White South African farmers will be removed from their land after a landslide vote in Parliament." This is not some fake conspiracy. It's really happening, and it really happened to this family. Government.
Incredible. Okay. Incredible that a politician would say something like that. It blows my mind.
Bill, I thought it might be wise, since what you have is a U.S. attorney saying this, and people don't always want to believe attorneys. I'm aware of that. I work with lots of attorneys, and I can assure you they're perfectly decent human beings, but I know what the reaction sometimes is. So I went to the trouble of finding you the clip where that politician actually says it in an interview with an Indian chap. Okay? And that would be clip 2 in that list that I sent. So if Ashley could again help us out by lining this up while I buy her a couple of seconds of time.
Here we go.
I've committed. I've never slapped a white person. Nothing. I've never called for their slaughter. I've never called for their killing. At least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd understand somebody watching that. They freak out. It sounds like a genocidal
film. Cry babies.
Cry babies. Make it clear.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. So I did that especially for those folks who get kind of cringy when they hear the word attorney. Okay.
Yeah, I'd feel safe if I lived down there. Yeah, I'd feel like, you know, I could sleep at night.
And now, who was that? Just for reference,
that
for
was,
folks who
that
don't keep
track. Julius Malema, who is the leader of the third biggest party in Parliament, and previously was the youth leader of the ruling party. So he got fed up because the ruling party was not nasty enough yet to white folks, and so he split off, formed his own crowd. They call them freedom fighters, and they dress up in cheap red overalls, so they go to Parliament dressed in head-to-toe red uniforms, the true, you know, old Soviet colors, so to speak. So that's how he sounds in a regular interview with the news media, where he says he's not calling for the slaughter of whites, at least not yet, but he can't guarantee the future. And then he leaves there and he gets onto a stage and he does what you can hear in the first clip that I send you, if that is by any chance.
What type of freedom is this? That 24 years into democracy, we are worse than the way we were during apartheid. The people wanted their land.
So that's him himself admitting that things are now worse than under apartheid. all right. And then if we might hear clip number 3, you will hear what he then says when he gets on a stage in front of a big crowd of people dressed in red. And otherwise, in other words, he's party faithful. This is what he tells them to do. Clip 3.
To kill, come on, sir. Shoot to kill, kill a man. Kiss the poor, the farmer. Kiss the poor, the farmer. Brr, pa, pa. Brr, pa, pa. Attention.
Okay.
Okay, so people can't see, actually I should preface that. They can see the clips. I've put them all on the page for today. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, look for the show on March 3rd, 2019. It's at the bottom of the page. But,
well, that doesn't make the hair on your head, your arms stand up when you, I mean, he's just inciting killing the white people. Kill them.
So we'll give everybody 2 minutes to go look that up, take a quick break, and we'll come back. And, for those people who are not near a computer, Harry, I want you to tell them what they just heard. So we'll take a really, really swift break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online.
Sure.
WeThePeopleRadio.us. Okay, so right before the break, we played a video, the sound from a video clip, and we've done that on some different shows, but
yes.
He's hard to understand, but I'll tell you what, he just sounds like a warlord. I mean, he is so a warlord, but he sounds like a warlord.
When people look at that clip, what they'll see is a stage. There's a guy on the stage. He's essentially running on the spot in a sort of ritual little dance that's called the toi toi in South Africa. It's a supposedly a revolutionary dance. And then below him, in front of the stage, is a sea of people dressed in red echoing his every word. And what he's singing is, kiss the boer, the farmer. He's saying kiss the boer, the farmer, because he's not allowed to say kill the boer, the farmer. He used to sing that. Then he was dragged to court for that, so he replaced double L with double S. Everybody knows what he means. As he says it, as he says kiss the boer, the farmer, he shapes his right hand and forefinger into the shape of a gun, and then he points it at the horizon sort of with a flick of his arm. And every time he does it, he goes... brr, pow, pow, pow. There's no doubt that what he means is kill the boer, kill the farmer. And the word boer means nothing other than farmer. It is Afrikaans, my language, my mother tongue, for farmer. It's the same word for the Dutch, the same for the Flemish. In German, it's bau. Every person in Northern Europe knows what that word means. It means farmer.
Hmm.
So no subtlety there.
No subtlety there. And now I'm leading up to something else here, which is very special for today. But I think what you first need to hear is the president of that country denying farm attacks after President Trump tweeted on the subject some months ago, which really annoyed that government down there. Believe me, it did. So clip number 7, if Ashley is anywhere near the right buttons, is that this is President Cyril Ramaphosa, the understudy and protege of Nelson Mandela, denying any farm attacks. He's also the guy who got the job as president, after promising that he would expropriate the farms of white people without compensation, otherwise known as he'll just take the farms and chase the people off.
We were seated together at the lunch table, so we never really got time to talk about the tweet. It was just an opportunity to shake hands, to say how are you and all that. But on the tweet itself, he was clearly misinformed. And whoever gave him that information was completely wrong. There are no killings of farmers or white farmers in South Africa.
We are at the postmortem.
Okay, that's pretty much it.
I like the cartoon music at the end because, really, he's just giving people fiction.
Yeah, I'm using a clip there from a Swedish guy, and he's helpful, but I don't share his extremely far-right views. So President Ramaphosa denies those attacks. That was one too many for the person in clip 8, who is a lady by the name of Mariandra Heunis, H-E-U-N-I-S. She's a lovely lady with four children, the last of which was born a week after her husband was killed in front of her own eyes and those of her daughter. And this was too much for Mariandra to bear, so she took to the air, and that is clip 8.
This message is for President Ramaphosa and the good people of America. President Ramaphosa recently stated very casually in New York to the media that there are no killings of white farmers in South Africa. There are no farm murders. Really? My name is Mariandra Yenes, and I'm a survivor of a farm attack. My husband was shot 6 times during such an attack. He was murdered in cold blood in front of me and my 6-year-old daughter. He was shot 6 times, and the last one was in the head. I had to pick up our broken life after that. I had to give birth to our 4th child, our son, 5 days after Daddy's funeral. These attacks do happen. It happens almost daily. Our story is one of thousands. What would you do if it happens to you or to your loved ones? What would you do if you had to raise 4 little children alone after your husband was murdered in cold blood and they stole nothing? How would you feel if you had to slip in the blood of your loved one? The smell of it seeping through the floors of your house, the house you were supposed to be safe in. These attacks happen, and it happens to good and normal people. What would you do if this happened to you? What would you do if your government denies that it happens? Would you keep quiet? So I ask you, the people of America, to help us to share this message, to help us to spread awareness of these farm murders, because they do happen. We appeal to you to help us.
There you go. I have just one question, really. I'm trying to do something really quickly here on the screen. I have 2 more clips to do with farmers, but right now, as we're talking, there is a lady sitting in front of her computer in South Africa who contacted me yesterday, and what I would like to do is share with you what she told me. I believe we should do that in the next section, and that would work much better. Right now, maybe we want to play one more clip, and this is from a lady describing an attack on her farm, and that would be clip 5. And if people, that's okay.
I mean, my attack was 6 years ago, and I can still smell them. I can still at times hear their voices. I can see them. I can see David. They separated us and they fought with David until he had nothing left in him. He couldn't fight anymore. And then he just shot him.
Was David killed because he was white?
The things that they said when I was with him, you being, the word white being thrown around quite a bit, the word black being thrown around a bit. Yes, I think it was more because he was white.
There are those on the outside who are latching okay. onto stories such as yours.
The point is, she also goes on to describe, you know, what's now happening. She's still running that farm. You can see her on her own tractor in that thing, in that clip. And I would defy every human being with a proper soul. Look at that particular video clip and look that lady in the eye. If you have a character at all to you, look her in the eye as she speaks. Okay.
And that clip is dated June 9th, 2018, so it isn't like it was a long time ago.
No, the killing was 6 years ago. She's still there. The interview is recent.
Right.
She also was asked what would she do if her farm were invaded, and that would be clip six, and maybe we should play that before taking the break. And then
okay. That's it.
Do you fear that at some point your land's going to be invaded?
Yes.
And what would you do?
I'd fight. I'm not going to stand down. My husband and I bought this farm legally. We put everything into this farm. Our minds, our bodies, our souls, blood, sweat and tears, everything went into this farm. This is my country as much as what it's everybody else's.
Okay. I'm not actually sure what one can add to any of that. Hopefully that gives folks a little bird's eye view of the human dimension of this thing. Believe me, I have not shared with you what happens during some of these attacks. But I know people who have to handle that. And when we come back from the next break that is probably upon us, then I would like to share with you a note I received from a lady I used to work with back in South Africa.
Perfect. We will be back. I hope you do go look up these clips. And for folks who want a lot more information, it's all there on the site at wethepeopleradio.us. Guest today is Dr. Harry Bouyans. It is March 3rd, 2019, and we're talking about South Africa. Okay.
So, Aaron, what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce folks to a lady whose name I cannot share for reasons that she will be affected in South Africa if I do, badly so. I worked with her in the early 1990s. And I brought her into our organization because I thought she was just perfect for what we faced. She She was actually a freelance journalist, and more than that, she was a true free spirit. Used to ride around with a blue flower power Volkswagen Beetle, and with a bumper sticker that said "Just visiting this planet." Okay.
I think I've seen her driving through Mount Shasta.
Absolutely.
Her car's here now.
I just thought that our organization was too stodgy, too prudish, too everything, and that she would help shake this up. And she did. And a lovely lady. And we separated paths in the 1990s. And yesterday, as fate would have it, I get an email from her. And it turns out she's now involved in the South African judiciary, and her work covers farm murders. And she was contacting me because she had picked up on some of the stuff I'm doing. And here are her words to me late yesterday in an email, and I know she is listening right at this time. Going for 1 o'clock in the night over there, but she'll be listening. So I'm going to quote her, and I hope I do her justice. There is so much work. The courts can't keep up, and every criminal has all these constitutional rights. It's traumatizing and heartbreaking, Harry. I spend almost every day on rapes and murders. As we speak, I'm busy addressing a terrible farm murder. An illegal comes into this country across the border and cold-bloodedly shoots two white folks. The wife watched her husband drop instantly, shot twice at point-blank range. The accused and his accomplice then marched her all around the house whilst continually stabbing a knife into her, demanding safe keys, guns, etc. And then they shot her. She fell and felt her legs getting warm, and she knew immediately that the bullet had lodged in her spine. She survived, but she is in a wheelchair. I listen to her and their daughter tell the details in court, and day after day, I become part of this and feel it eating away the life in me. By the time I stop at night, I'm no longer whole. I'm even still working now, and tomorrow it all continues again. Yes, I live in terror for my children. They have no children. They can't in South Africa. I may still finish my degree, but that's if I live long enough. Elsewhere in her email, she carries on to tell me, now we have survival packs to make and gun licenses to get and tactical courses to attend, together with learning how to nurse war wounds and such. Preparedness is the key. And then she continues with, my daughter's husband has just bought an old army truck for transporting people to the mountains when it becomes necessary. They've been storing water, fuel, food, first aid meds and stuff for months now. For myself, I just pray for a quick death. Please, no rape or torture. Despite 4 security companies driving through the suburb on constant patrols, I have alarms inside and outside surrounding the property. But the attackers now know how to disable them, if they know nothing else. I helped her figure out where to buy a house.
Wow.
This is South Africa today. This is what ordinary white Christian people like you guys are living through in the east and the north of the country. I trust this has you calibrated.
It's just crushing. And then, I'm just going to warn people, when they go watch the videos that are linked, if you really want to be frustrated, be sure and read the comments below the video. I mean, people are absolutely, I don't even, you know, if there's more than 100% ignorant about the history. And after speaking with you on 8 previous occasions, and then this one, we know that the Dutch did not come there and kill all of the natives and steal their land. They don't owe the land back to anyone. They didn't steal it in the first place. And the only people who've really been persecuted in that area are the whites, as you so ably educated us, that they were the ones put in concentration camps.
Well, Aaron, I want to be clear about this. I think the white folks like myself did a whole bunch of stuff wrong there, okay? We cannot wash our hands and be Christian people. So things were done wrong. I don't think anything was done with evil intent, but there were things done that were so brazenly stupid that I would call it, you know, a stupidity that borders on evil. There were laws made that I cannot defend, and I'm not prepared to try and do it. But it's such a complex place with such a variety of players, and it's like nobody wants to spend 5 minutes to just find out the basics that will help them figure out, you know, all the stuff that's happening. And much of this trouble for us started in 1966, to be precise, on 6 June 1966 in Cape Town, when there was a visit by none other than the late Bobby Kennedy. And here are his words. "I come here this evening because of my deep interest and affection for a land settled by the Dutch in the mid-17th century, then taken over by the British, at last independent, a land which defined itself on a hostile frontier, a land which has tamed rich natural resources through the energetic application of modern technology. I refer, of course, to the United States of America." So he's on a stage in South Africa, and every line I quoted to you applies to South Africa and definitely applies to the United States. We're the same people with the same experience all up to that point. The trouble arose because of other things he said in that meeting when he started dragging the slave history in the United States, when he started to drag that into the South African picture where it doesn't belong at all. I guess nobody told him that white guys like me are the ones with the slave ancestors.
But see, that doesn't sell. That, I mean, that's what probably most people in this country believe happened, was that the whites went to South Africa and enslaved the black people, just like Americans. And it's just not true.
I got to watch the time here again, but the I'll go through something that I know I've mentioned several times before, but my earliest foreign ancestor in South Africa was a slave. It was an Indian slave woman who had killed her husband after he had abused her. She was going to be tied in a bag and then thrown alive into the sea to drown, because that would typically be the sentence. But the judge heard her plea for leniency about what her husband had done. There was evidence to that effect, and he decided to banish her. The Dutch knew about on the whole earth, and that was the Cape of Good Hope, or Cape of Storms, as some called it. And so she arrived there in April 1657. It so happens that on the same boat was another slave who worked in the household of the ship's captain. And both of them were sold at the Cape to local people, and my ancestor became a washerwoman for the commander, and the other lady also, both were from India via Indonesia. She became a wet nurse for the commander's children. Both my wife and I have slave ancestors in the household of the first commander at the Cape in 1657. My first European ancestor landed just a handful of months later and became the first ever person to fully and completely settle at the Cape, have children there, and be made a citizen and get a piece of land to become a farmer. My blood has been farming there since October 1657. But none of them are my first ancestor there. My first ancestor is actually a little Khoi girl, an indigenous Khoi girl, who was taken into the commander's household to become an interpreter. And she eventually married a Danish ship's doctor who went looking for the kingdom of Monomotapa no fewer than six times. That's who I am. Mandela has no slave ancestors.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, but they won't tell you that. You know, I think the New York Times would burst into instantaneous combustion if they had to process this.
The flames of truth.
No, I don't think so. They've dealt with a lot of misinformation quite well.
Yeah, the bad part is there's so much misinformation, you don't know. Well, I mean, sometimes you do, but you can't always tell what's real and what's fake.
Mm-hmm.
But that really is, besides the fact that, you know, you have an evil government doing bad things, but I think that's the hardest part about this particular issue, is that people come with all these preconceived ideas that are not based on any historical fact at all, and it's very difficult to untangle that and then get them back on track.
And then they... You know, like I've told you before, like the Danish professor in New York who looked me straight in the eye, rose to his 6'6" or whatever, 6'5", 6'6". All he still lacked was the horns on his head. Mm. And he looked me in the eye and he said, "You are a sick anachronism. You are a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die." My sin was that I had asked him, "What should we then do down there?"
So all the people who've had 300-plus year... I mean, people in South Africa have a longer bloodline history there. The whites in South Africa have a longer bloodline history there than many people in the United States who consider themselves, you know, not to be new to this country, but...
Yeah.
No, but they do have more national history.
My family doesn't go back 100 years.
Not even 100 years. We've got to take a break.
Most Americans.
Look at Bill trying to tell me what to do. Look at that.
Most Americans have a great grandfather that arrived in the country. Most white Afrikaners have ancestors that go back to the late 1600s.
Sure.
We've got a hard break coming up.
We've got the news coming.
So I got to tell Aaron what to do.
Again.
Time for a break.
I like it when he has to tell me twice, though, because I make him work for it.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans.